If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Hopeful Hints, hosted by Dr. Tara, guides and supports those on the often challenging and isolating journey of women's health concerns and infertility. There's a particularly powerful episode that you should check out called All Things Endometriosis, which dives deep into understanding the condition to help the many women who suffer from endometriosis and have no idea they have it, and healthcare providers who are uneducated about it, making the diagnosis process so difficult. Check out Hopeful Hints on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown. I'm Dr. Mitzi Crocover. You're about to listen to the second part of an interview with Dr. John LaPuma, internist, pioneer of culinary medicine, and regenerative farmer. In the previous episode, we talked about the importance of food to our health and ways to incorporate healthy choices that not only reduces our risk of disease, but can actually make us feel better. In this episode, we talk about the benefits of nature on our health and how to incorporate more aspects of it in our lives. In fact, we discuss seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, and the natural way it can be treated. And one way we can blend a healthy diet with getting out into nature is through farming. And Dr. LaPuma provides some firsthand information on that as well. So we're picking up where we left off in part one of my interview with Dr. John LaPuma. We were talking about the benefits of a healthy diet, and then I asked about immune function, and the conversation went into a somewhat different direction.
And actually, you know, as you know, what's good for you that a lot of people don't know is being outside for their immune function. You know, I've become interested in this idea that there's a nature-based medicine that isn't just about the planet going to hell, although it may be, but instead that nature actually can have a positive and beneficial effect, and it's private on the same sets of diseases that I just described, cardiovascular disease, cancer, incidence, GI disease, although the mechanism probably is different, although there's an argument that the immune system is actually at the bottom of nature-based interventions and their potential beneficial effect, particularly forest bathing. Have you heard of forest bathing?
Yes. Let's tell our listeners what that is.
It's not bathing in the forest, although the Japanese are, that's what the term means. But it's simply immersion in the forest surrounded by phytoncides, which are the beneficial aromatic chemicals that cypress trees and other trees give off to communicate with one another and to ward off pests. But on people, it's thought that they have a beneficial effect on their immunity as well as on other systems in the body. And there's a well-known study, although it's very small, that's been repeated a couple of times, showing that that the improvement in natural killer cells, which are, as you know, the white blood cells in the body that pick off cancer cells and other deformed cells, by being in the forest with others, walking slowly, you know, covering a quarter mile in 3 hours, is the beneficial effect on natural killer cells lasts for a month in women. And having extra natural killer cells helps you pick off not just cancer cells that occur in your body, but also other deformed cells, and helps you fight infection as well. So it may be that the immunity effects of nature are responsible for some of its benefits, and I think we could all use that.
Absolutely. So you talked about going very slowly. Would hiking, for example, if you're, you know, at a higher clip, also provide that kind of benefit?
No question about it. I just reviewed a paper on wilderness medicine for the American Journal of Lifestyle Medicine. And hiking is not just great exercise, but illustrates some of the beneficial effects of nature that I think most people underestimate. For example, the social connection. You know, we think about nature as, you know, way out there. You see it on television. It's the Grand Canyon. It's the Pacific Ocean in the middle. It's Hawaii.
Right.
But nature is actually the lettuce in your salad. It's the breeze by your curtains. It's the dog at your feet. It's the park down the street. It's the herb garden on your windowsill. Nature is much closer than that. It's as easy as looking at a plant before you look at a screen in the morning. And looking out a window, preferably at trees. Did you know that in the 1990, there was a paper published that's been cited over 5,000 times by Roger Ulrich that showed that patients who looked out a window after their cholecystectomy, they used to have to be in the hospital for a gallbladder operation, and saw trees instead of seeing a brick wall, needed to stay in the hospital 8/10 of a day less. They needed less pain medication, fewer narcotics for pain relief. And the nurses said they had a better hospital stay than the people who had to look at a brick wall. So if you're ever in a hospital or you know somebody who's going to the hospital, ask for a room with a window that looks out.
The view. Now, that's really impactful. And as you were describing, you know, some of those small vignettes, it made me think of being very present and almost mindful, that there's a component of that as well.
Yes. I think the meditative nature of nature is underestimated. It allows you to, when walking in a park or surrounded by greenery or looking at blue space, blue space is anything that's water-related, as you know. And whether that's a fountain or in a courtyard or the ocean or a lake or a stream, your attention by nature is drawn instead of demanded. You know, these days we have notifications on our phone that ping us and vibrate us, and there's always a list of stuff to do. And if it's not on your phone, then it's, you know, it's in your head. But when there are a number of studies that have shown, including one well known by Greg Bratman, who's now at the University of Washington, who did MRIs on people who walked in a meadow near Stanford for 90 minutes and then again for 30 minutes and walked down the street in Palo Alto, which is a very pretty town with lots of greenery, but nevertheless a town with lots of cars and buildings and street and traffic noises, and showed that they had less activity in their prefrontal cortex, which is a center for rumination and for anxiety, if they walked in the meadow than they walked in on a busy street. So having traffic noise is not quite as good as being anywhere that you can be surrounded by green or blue, but it doesn't eliminate the benefit of it. It's just better if it's green and blue or blue primarily. And these MRI results are quite striking and were some of the first hard data that we had that nature was really making a difference in a scientific way.
Well, you talked about screens and notifications, and I think that obviously the draw to being on our screens or sitting is almost of a magnetic nature. So how do you recommend people get more motivated to get back into nature?
I used to tell people to just turn off their phone, but it's too hard. And actually your phone can be useful because it can provide a map and GPS in case you get lost. So you can take your phone with you, just put it on airplane mode if for a while. And I think getting off screens, we know that sitting is the new smoking and being sedentary is bad for you. There are many people who set alarms and make themselves get up and walk around. I have a standing desk and that helps a little bit. There are ways around it, but I think we do need prompts. So those are my prompts. there's some actually really interesting data about women and nature, and mostly it has to do with mortality. The women, there's some striking data that suggests that women that live in green areas that are within 250 meters of their home that are especially green are less likely to die from respiratory illness, and 13% are less likely to die of cancer than women who don't live in green areas.
Well, it brings to mind, though, that there are a number of women living in very urban areas that may not have access, you know, to that opportunity. If there is a park, does that count?
Oh, more than count. Yes, as I said, it's nature is closer than we see it on TV. And actually, during the pandemic, women actually increased their nature use in more ways than men. They're twice as likely to garden, three times more likely to walk, and found, you know, the benefits to include mental well-being and familiarity with landscape and just fun. And actually, there's really interesting information about simulated green and blue environments through augmented reality and virtual reality.
I was wondering about that. Does it count?
It sure does count. It's not quite the same. You don't get the fighting sides that you do from the cypress trees in the Japanese forest, right, or the electrons coming off the ocean when you have waves crash, right, or petting a dog and the unconditional love that comes from dogs, or the probable beneficial effects on the microbiome from gardening, where you change not just your gut microbiome but your skin microbiome, and with that your protection against bugs and your immunity and the reduction in allergies and asthma. But it has other beneficial effects, like the ones that I mentioned about having your attention drawn, about getting out of your head quite literally, about the things you have to do and the obligations you have and the list of tasks ahead.
I know that we only have a little bit of more of your time, so I want to make sure that we talk about regenerative farming, which makes a lot of sense given your focus on culinary medicine as well as eco medicine. So is that how you got into it? What is it, and how is that different, for example, from organic farming?
Regenerative farming is the idea that farmers are farming carbon too. So when they grow vegetables and fruit and animals, they also ought to aim to leave the ground better than they found it. You know, in most agriculture in this country, we extract stuff. You plant crops and you basically suck them out of the earth and pump in chemicals to try to improve production at all costs. And so the land for producing crops has largely been dramatically depleted, particularly in the Middle West, and so has to be supplemented dramatically again, especially with nitrogen, but also with phosphorus and potassium and with other micronutrients that are used to grow crops. Regenerative agriculture looks at this differently and says, we only have so much topsoil and biodiversity. They're both dramatically disappearing. Why don't we try to store carbon in the soil, where 40% of carbon is stored anyway, improve the planet as we do, create ecosystems under the ground that occur naturally, that are fungal, avoid synthetic artificial chemicals whenever we can, build the microbiome of the soil, and leave it better than when we found it, and equal the production of conventional agriculture, with a greater focus on nutrient density and the better nutrient density, higher nutrient density of crops when we can do that. And it's succeeding. It's a small movement, but it's moving rapidly. General Mills, for example, has identified 1,000, 1 million acres that it's going to
develop regeneratively over the next few years.
And I know that you recently gave a talk on regenerative agriculture, healthy soil, and health. So what is that connection between soil and health?
The soil has a microbiome. There are billions of bacteria in every teaspoon of soil. And many of those bacteria can be good for you and good for your own microbiome. But doctors have been thought to look at soil as disease-causing, right? It's a disease-causing medium. There are bugs in soil. There are heavy metals. There are pesticides. There are anthrax and tetanus and you name it. Bad stuff is in the soil. A patient comes
botulism,
in.
Right.
Yeah. Botulism, right. So the idea that soil can be healthy and can grow food that is actually better for you and can influence your own microbiome, which, by the way, is 2 pounds, about the size of your brain, and has about the same, many of the same functions. It has neurologic functions, digestive function, immune function, makes vitamins. The idea that the soil that food grows in can be not just produce antibiotics, which it does nearly all antibiotics, and a quarter of our drugs, but also can affect you personally by how the food is grown, about which food it produces that is especially good for you. And I use the Environmental Working Group's Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen, as mm-hmm. I'm sure you do, to recommend foods that are that you can buy conventionally safely and foods that you really have to buy organically because they are thin-skinned. And strawberries, by the way, are always at the top of that list. And peaches and nectarines are almost always on the list, as is spinach.
Sure. And just to clarify, so that list is the ones that you definitely want to have organic, grown without pesticides.
Yes. So the Environmental Working Group produces the Clean 15, which are okay to buy, and the Dirty Dozen. The Dirty Dozen you have to buy organic. And that's the berries, every type of berry, spinach, most leafy greens, every thin-skinned stone fruit, nectarines, peaches, plums. So having an emphasis on soil that is good for the things that grow into it can change your own microbiome so that it is more protective and more powerful and provides you with better immunity. And having your hands in the soil in any way.
The other question I wanted to ask you is that I know that you have addressed the issue of seasonal affective disorder, and at a time now when the days are shorter and darker, some people are very sensitive in terms of their mood. So can you speak a little bit about that?
Yes, especially women have seasonal affective disorder disproportionately, which, as you know, is a form of depression. We actually created a quiz called sadquiz.com, which helps determine informally whether you're at significant risk for seasonal affective disorder. It's on our website. It's free, sadquiz.com. And it gives you specific steps to take if you are, in fact, at risk for seasonal affective disorder. As a form of depression, it is amenable to the same types of approaches that depression is, except that bright light therapy is so powerful as a potential treatment. And buying a bright light that you wake up to and read for 30 minutes before you start your day is a great way to improve symptoms. And going outside where you have broad spectrum light early in the morning especially is a wonderful way both to get outside and also to stop seasonal affective disorder. Of course, if it's more severe and you need treatment, you need to talk to your doctor about it. But I think that bright light therapy and going outside and sadquiz.com are good steps to see whether or not that affects you, particularly January, February, March.
Absolutely. What did I not ask you that you feel is important for our audience to know?
I just want to say that I think women disproportionately suffer the impacts of climate change and of being separated from nature, nature disconnection, more than men do. And whether that's because of cultural norms or inequitable distribution of roles and resources and power, it can vary. But the good news is that, as I said, during the pandemic, women increased their nature use in more ways than men. It could be inventive in that way. And I want to encourage people listening to the podcast to try gardening as a way of regaining your connection to nature and improving your own microbiome, as well as improving self-esteem and mood. It's a powerful therapy. And of course, you get tomatoes.
and you could do that with your kids or grandkids too.
Absolutely. Kids are so great in the garden. I just love this.
So Dr. John LaPuma, thank you so much for this great conversation and for taking the time to speak with us today.
It's great to see you again, Mitzi. Come on out and I'll show you around.
I look forward to it.
Great. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I learned a lot. We'll have links to Dr. LaPuma's website in our podcast notes, where you can also find his books. I also invite you to check out our website at beyondthepapergown.com, where you can share your comments on this episode and others, find articles on the topics we cover here, and sign up for our newsletter. We've also been creating some great social media posts lately on Instagram and TikTok, so check them out and let us know what you think. Our podcast was produced by Patrick Shambayati and me, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian. As always, thank you for listening and be well.
If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Hopeful Hints, hosted by Dr. Tara, guides and supports those on the often challenging and isolating journey of women's health concerns and infertility. There's a particularly powerful episode that you should check out called All Things Endometriosis, which dives deep into understanding the condition to help the many women who suffer from endometriosis and have no idea they have it, and healthcare providers who are uneducated about it, making the diagnosis process so difficult. Check out Hopeful Hints on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.